Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome, everybody, to another episode of The Grueling Truth. I'm your host, Mike Goodpaster. We have a great show for you tonight. Right now, as always, I would like to welcome in my co-host, Matt Andruskavage.
Thank you, Mike. Good to be here. Always fun to talk about the NFL.
Hey, like I said, we had another great show. Last week, we had Gary Jeter, who played off those legendary USC teams of the mid-70s. Now we've got one that played on the legendary USC teams of the late 70s, Dennis Smith, six-time Pro Bowler. Helped guide the Denver Broncos to three Super Bowls during his career, totaling over 1,000 career tackles. Thanks for joining us tonight, Dennis.
Hey, great having me. Thanks for having me.
I'm excited no problem.
About being on this show.
Yeah, like I said, last week we had Mr. Jeter on the show. He played USC. I know he said to tell you hi. He said you were a freshman when he was a senior.
I never played with Gary Jeter, but he was there like the year before I got there. The year before
was
his last year.
Yeah, he was the 77 in a class of 76 with it.
I was the class.
Okay,
my first year was 77, but I know him well. I mean, I know him because, of course, they would always come back and we would always see those guys. So, you know, I know who he is, and I was well aware of who he was too because.
Yeah. Well, like we talked about, you won a national championship. Go ahead.
Oh, no.
Go ahead. Sorry about that. I was saying, you won a national championship at USC. You played for John Robinson, legendary NCAA football coach. You played in the same defensive backfield with Ronnie Lott, Joey Browner. Tell us a little bit about your college days and what it was like winning a national championship.
Well, it was great. My original, growing up in California, you were a USC fan for football and a UCLA fan for basketball. And me watching growing up, I had to make a choice of what team do I want to play for, you know. And I almost went to UCLA, and it was because of the basketball program, because I was always in Westwood. Like every weekend, me and my friends would go to Westwood. So I was, like, so engrossed into UCLA basketball. But as I grew up, I realized, okay, I played basketball, but I wasn't going to play basketball in college. So what school do I want to go to? Do I want to go to the team that, you know, is going to lose to USC every year? Or do I want to go to the team that's going to, you know, beat UCLA every year? So I had to make a choice, and my choice was to go to USC, obviously for football reasons, but I almost went to UCLA just because I love the basketball program so much. And I could name all the players on the teams back in the day. So, you know, I still am a UCLA fan in basketball, but USC football. And matter of fact, when I went to the first, you know, the game, a UCLA-USC game, that kind of cemented my decision, other than the fact that Dennis Thurman, who went to my high school, was an All-American at USC. That last game I went to, USC-UCLA game, was the deciding factor, because I went on a UCLA ticket, and I sat in the UCLA stands, and I watched UCLA come out in the powder blue uniforms, and then I watched SC come out, and the horse came out, and they won the game, and that was, you know, that cemented my decision, and I was, I was USC for them from that point on.
What was it like playing with guys like Ronnie Lott and Joey Browner? I mean, the three of you, that's some pretty legendary names.
Yeah, well, we had a lot of, you know, when I came to SC, it was a lot of talent, and I think that's what that scares people away sometimes. You either want to go there to see how good you are, or you just don't want to go there because there's too much competition. But for me, as a player, I wanted to go and see how good I was right then. I said, I want to put myself in a position to be around the best. And I think we all made each other better. And also, I learned a lot from guys like Ronnie. I felt Ronnie Lott was, he was more advanced. He was ahead of me as far as just knowing about the game. He knew so much more about the game than me. I was more of a raw talent at that time. And I think I learned a lot from Ronnie and just on how to, you know, play the game. And by the time I left, I think we were on an equal level by the time we reached our senior year. But I think coming in, I was more raw. You know, I didn't know as much about the game. I hadn't played as much. You know, I didn't play in pads, football pads, until I was in the 10th grade. So I started late and played all the sports, but just was more of a raw talent. But it was awesome playing with those guys. And Marcus Allen, who a lot of people don't know, his freshman year, he was a defensive back too. So he was with us. And, you know, so we all became really close. And it was a great, great, great place to play. And couldn't play for a better coach with John Robinson, because he was so calm and cool all the time. And he made it fun for us.
Well, after USC, you get drafted by the Denver Broncos. After their last Super Bowl appearance was in 1977, the Broncos remained a good to decent team, made the playoffs, I think, once in that time from 78 to 81 before you got there. What do you think were the primary reasons for the Broncos' rise to the top of the AFC in the 80s? Was it primarily Elway, Reeves, or a combination of things?
I think it was definitely a combination, you know, because I think the defense stayed strong, which is important. You know, you want to have your defense intact. And he was able to develop the offense, you know, and the defense still remained strong enough to beat people. Because when I came to Denver, their team was basically a defensive team. You know, it was a defensive mindset. And it was a different, like, I believed, you know, I was used to winning coming from USC. We expected to win every week. But coming to Denver, they took it to another level, especially on the defensive side of the ball, where they really expected to shut people out and not to score, you know. And they went into games believing that they could do that. And I think believing that, you shut people down a lot and you keep the score really low. And they were able to do that time and time again. And I was like, everybody, like, even the years we weren't good, I knew we were going to win at least 8 games at home. Very seldom did we lose at home. So, you know, I could count on us winning those games. And you win 2 games on the road, you're 10-6 every year. So, you know, we expected to go to the playoffs every year. But the defense set the tone for the team. But then when John came, Elway came, they were able to build a offense around him, and that took us to the next level. I'd say that would definitely was what took us to the next level, them getting John Elway, without a doubt.
The 1980s Broncos really don't get their due credit, especially on the defensive side of the ball. Tell us about what it was like playing on that defense and what the guys were like.
Well, I was fortunate enough to play long enough to play in different, with different, a couple of different defensive coordinators. And Joe Collier's defense was really something that evolved into something that was really complicated for young guys to grasp. And I was fortunate enough to come from a defensive system where we did a lot of the things that Joe did. So when I got to Denver, the only thing I had to do was change the names of the defenses. And I was like, okay, this defense, we played this defense, okay. I just had to change the name and say, all right, we played this, we played this. So everything I had seen before, so it wasn't confusing to me. But for a lot of guys that were just, some of them really raw talents that could really start, they couldn't grasp the concept of the defenses. Because every year, Joe would add more little things to the defense. And it made it more and more complicated over time. So it got to a point where young guy couldn't come in and learn the defense really fast. And if he couldn't learn it, he couldn't get on the field because they weren't going to let you play if you didn't know what you were doing. And we were really successful with it, but it took away from some of the talent that sometimes you just had to get guys a little smarter and had to sacrifice the talent side of it. So I can appreciate both because I like to play with people who know what they're doing. I don't like to play as I play with people that had talent and I would have to tell them over and over what to do. And that's that. I don't like that. I'd rather have someone with less talent and just knows what to do so you can count on them. And then whatever things they're lacking, you could take over with what you have, you know. So, you know, Joe's defense was really more complex over time. But then when Wade Phillips came, he simplified everything again and made it easier for a young guy to come in and just step on the field. And I could appreciate both coaches, and they both their philosophies both worked. And I think I was more successful. I was successful in both defenses, but I was probably more successful in Wade Phillips' defense because it was less taxing on me physically because I didn't have to play so much man-for-man because with Joe Collier, I played a lot of man-for-man, and he made me play like – I was almost like the third corner on the team. So I think I like playing with Wade a little bit more, but we were successful with both defensive coaches.
All right, now 1985, this is the game I most remember. And I know you probably know where I'm going with this, but 1985, one of the greatest finishes I've ever seen in a football game because I don't think I've ever seen back-to-back kicks blocked in return for a touchdown. I mean, what happened? I mean, they didn't change anything, it didn't look like. You ran basically the same play again and blocked it again. Can you talk about that game a little bit, what that overtime was like?
Well, the thing that the interesting thing about that game was, besides the fact that Louis was able to recover both blocks, I don't know how he did that. The one that didn't count and the one that did count, he was right there to scoop it up. It's like I can remember Louis telling me, "That's all right. We're gonna block it again. We're gonna block it again." But actually, I had blocked a field goal earlier in the game. I had actually already blocked a field goal or extra point. I can't remember if it was a field goal or extra point, but I had already blocked one. It was earlier in the game, I think. And the one that didn't count wasn't even me. I think it was Lulon Jones or somebody else had blocked it, and it didn't count. So the next time, Louis said, "That's okay. We're going to block it again. We're going to block it again." And we really played well that whole game, and then it came down to that one kick, and I got through, and I had a knack for getting through that little crevice right there between the just right on the end, not all the way on the end of the line, but right in between that last blocker. I kind of had a knack for hurdling that guy and getting through, and I got there, got through him, and I blocked it, and there's Louis Wright again scooping the ball up, and I was like, wow, how is he getting this ball? Because that's not easy to do. And he scooped the ball up and it returned it for a touchdown. And someone posted on my Facebook page just the other day another play where against the New England Patriots, where it was late in the game and I think it was a tie game too, or it wasn't overtime, but Mosi Tatupu, who played with me at USC, was carrying the ball on a toss or something, and Steve Busick, who played with me at USC, stripped him of the ball, and the ball pops out, and I recovered it and ran it back for a touchdown. And that was another game like that, and it was the same year. I think it was the same year. I want to say it was the same year. And we won that game, and it was because of and that was – three USC guys all involved in the play, and that was another interesting play. I think that was the same year, too, though.
Well, right now it looks like we got a caller on the line. Let's see. Go ahead, caller. You got a question for Dennis Smith?
Yeah, how you doing, Mr. Smith?
All right, how you doing?
Hey, this is Jermaine. I'm from Indiana. Just a question about the you were on the Broncos on the 87 team, right? When they played against Cleveland. What was that emotion like for you on that final drive when Mac didn't get in? What was it like?
Are you talking about the game that we played in Denver? The playoffs
The one in Cleveland?
Are you talking about the drive or the fumble?
Talking about the fumble?
The fumble game. Yeah, that's the one.
Okay. Yeah, that's 87.
I can give you a little insight on this is from my perspective because I've had some great games against Cleveland and I've had some bad games against Cleveland. And the first year we played, Cleveland in Cleveland, the drive made Elway famous, and the drive almost got me fired because that was one of mine. That was one of those games where everything was going wrong for me. I was the one that caused that Cleveland made the last touchdown that they got was on me.
Brian Brennan.
The wide receiver. Brian Brennan.
Yeah, Brian
Brennan. Got a touchdown on me. And I was on his back when I was about to turn around and look for the ball, and he went the other way, and I tried to grab him, and I fell, and the ball, it looked like slow motion, he catches the ball and goes in for a touchdown. But that was one of those games. I was struggling the whole game. And I was on injury reserve that year, and I came back, and I hadn't played that much, but I was playing in that game. And the next year, I wasn't – because they used to play me out. I was like third corner. I would be on the slot receiver, which is the most difficult guy to cover usually. And I'm on the slot receiver, right? So the next year in 87, here we are again. We're on against the Cleveland Browns again. But now they don't have me playing the slot guy anymore. But we get in the game, and all these guys on the team have these, like, strained hamstrings, right? And they're all – and then as the game gets closer and closer, gets tighter and tighter, their hamstrings get tighter and tighter. Now all of a sudden, they don't want to play, right? So the coach is looking at me and Tyrone Braxton, who's a rookie, and they're saying – he's thinking, all right, these guys don't want to go in now. They can't play. They're saying they can't play. Their hamstrings are tight. And they're looking at guys to put in, to put back on the slot receiver, Brian Brennan again, right? And I'm thinking, okay, he's going to put me at the slot. And I'm thinking, don't say me. And he's looking at me and Tyrone Braxton. He's looking at Tyrone. He's looking at me. And he says, okay, Dennis, you go back to the slot receiver. I'm like, in my mind, I'm saying, shit. And I'm like, oh, okay. All right, and I go out there. The first play, they throw on me. He runs about a five-yard, a little hook pattern, about a five-yard hook pattern, right? He turns around. I turn around. I turn to the right. The ball goes to the left. You know, I'm like, if I had, like, turned to the left, the ball would hit me in the stomach. And I turn to the left. He catches the ball. I'm like, okay, I can't let this keep happening. So that was the first play. And then another play, I think they threw on someone else. But on the next play, I'm thinking, oh, all right, I'm not going to let him catch this ball on me. I can't let him get the touchdown on me. So I'm running with him into the end zone. I turn around and see, what's the running back's name that was running with the ball? I can't remember.
Ernest Biner.
Ernest Biner,
Ernest Biner is running towards the end zone with the ball. I'm like, oh, I'm in the end zone following my man, thinking it's a pass and it's a draw. And he's running with the ball, and all of a sudden, our guy, I can't remember, what's my defensive back's name? See, that's the thing about, you know, I played 14 years. The concussion syndrome is probably a little affecting me, too. But anyway, our guy stripped him of the ball. And we recovered the fumble. But those games, I've had some. And then my last year playing against Cleveland in the playoffs again, I had one of my best games. So, you know, I had two interceptions and really played great. I should have had three. I remember the first early in the game they were the little running back they had. He was really fast too.
Metcalf.
Yeah, they would split him out wide all the time on the safeties, and then they would just throw him the ball, and he wouldn't run down the field at all. He'd just catch the ball right there and run away from people. So I remember all week I would say, all right, I'm gonna get way off of him, but I'm gonna be looking right at Bernie. I'm gonna be looking right at Bernie Kosar, and if he just takes a step and looks at him, I'm just gonna take off running and just intercept the ball. That was my plan. And sure enough, early in the game, I said, all right, here he split out wide. I was like, oh, here's Metcalf. Here's my chance. This is it. And if I was earlier in my career, I probably would have been fast enough to run and intercept it, but I was a little too far off, and I was I hesitated just a little bit because I think Bernie Kosar saw me, and he hesitated a little bit, but he still threw the ball. And that made me hesitate and not get to intercept it. But what I did was I ran through Metcalf, and Metcalf was not really – he was not the most fearless guy in the world. And I ran right through him, and I got a good hit, a big hit on him, and they never split him out again that game. That was the only time.
And
I
remember
was
Metcalf was only like 5'6", weighed like 180
yeah,
pounds. So.
I didn't want him to split him out anymore either. I didn't want him to split him out because he was a threat, you know, to catch the ball and do stuff. So when he got out there, I knew. I said, if I stay way off, they're gonna think, okay, we got him. But I was cluing Bernie the whole time. I was watching Bernie. I wasn't even looking at Metcalf. I was like, if he just takes that step and looks at Metcalf, I'm flying up there to get him. And I did it. I timed it. I just didn't time it just right enough to intercept it. But that set the tone for that whole game, I think, from a defensive perspective. And, you know, like I said, the first two Super Bowls, I felt I rode the bus to the Super Bowl. But that third Super Bowl we went to, I drove the bus. That was one of my best years. And the next year was even better than that, was 91 when we went to the AFC Championship against Buffalo. Now, that was a game.
Yeah, where a fellaway didn't get hurt, I think you guys win that game in
the
end.
Yeah, that was a game we should have won. And if you look at the game and think about, like, I blocked the field goal with San Diego that you talked about, but the only thing, the difference between us winning and losing that game was the field goal they got. And I almost blocked that one, and I was all the way in there. If you ever look at that film, I was in the backfield, and that ball went through my hands. Like, my hands were up through my hands. So that was how close I was to blocking. I was all the way back in the backfield. I was there with the ball, and I didn't hit the ball. So it wasn't meant to be for us. But we had a game plan that was so good for that, for Buffalo. And we decided as a team, and we were, even the players, and we looked at it, and we were saying, man, we gotta blitz them every time they come out with nobody in the backfield. And no matter what defense we were in, we had an automatic call to just blitz every time they came out with nobody in the backfield. If you could notice, they would put Thurman Thomas, everybody would line up in a wide receiver position. And no one would be in the backfield. We're like, okay, we're coming from both sides every time, and everybody's going to line up off the receiver so they can't just throw the ball, you know, up the field. So they're going to have to run a route in front of us, and we're just going to squat. And everybody was squatting.
Well, I do remember that. And the thing I remember the most about that is the fact they kept doing it.
Yeah, the whole time. We didn't call it off either until I think the second half. We just kept running. It was like, if they come out, nobody in the backfield, we're blitzing every time. And it worked so great, man. It was like, I think what happened, though, us losing to them and then winning, I think we took away their confidence, and it gave a, like, a game plan for other teams to how to deal with it. And when they win the Super Bowl, they weren't prepared, you know. And I think we had a lot to do with that. I think we took all their confidence away just by because they were blowing people out before that game.
Yeah.
and we went to Buffalo and they didn't score a touchdown. Their offense didn't score a touchdown on us.
Yeah.
And their defense was on their defense score.
Jermaine, did you have any other questions for Mr. Smith?
No, that was it. That was great. I appreciate it.
I'm sorry, Jermaine. I forgot you were on the phone, Jermaine. I just got carried away.
Hey, I'm enjoying the stories, man. I appreciate it.
Well, I'd like to piggyback off what you just said there real quick, and then we'll get over to Matt. You talked about how they never adjusted there. They didn't adjust in the Super Bowl. I mean, to me, I think one of the biggest travesties is Marv Levy is in the Hall of Fame and Dan Reeves is not. Could you tell us a little bit about Dan Reeves and playing for Dan Reeves?
I love playing for Dan. You know, he got the best out of all the players he had. You know, and he was he found ways to get teams more than just the Broncos. He got Atlanta to the Super Bowl, you know. He's been successful everywhere he's been. And I was the first player he drafted as a Denver Bronco head coach, and I feel a connection to him. And, you know, he just got inducted into the Ring of Fame in Denver, and it was long overdue. And I was glad to be there, too, to, you know, help induct him into the Ring of Fame. And I thought that was a great deal. But he did a great job, man. He did a great job. And you know, that's all you can look at as you look back. It's like he got us to the Super Bowl. We couldn't win it for him. I wish we could have, you know. But things needed to go right. You know, we weren't a team that was really dominant as far as, like, overwhelming talent. But we had to all play well on the days. Like, our great players had to play well, and we just didn't all play well on those days. And I think that was the reason we didn't win them.
Right now, I just want to let everybody listening know we've got a half-hour show, and we got 15 minutes of archive time that'll be in a podcast. So if you're listening now at the bottom of the hour, it'll cut you. We'll go off the air. We'll still be talking to Dennis Smith. And right after our show, at the top of the hour at 12 o'clock, you can get on and actually listen to the entire interview and the podcast there. So, Matt?
Dennis, I saw a video last year that with you and Steve Atwater talking about Steve's famous hit on Christian Okoye. Tell us what it was like to play with Steve and how much fear you guys put into opponents.
Well, it was a lot of fun. First of all, he's a great person, and I love playing with him. But let's talk about the Christian Okoye hit, because I was in that game,
definitely,
too. And we talked about it, but you don't see me in the game. You talk about the hit. You don't see me in the game that much. And what happened in the game was, and it shows you how fate kind of plays a part in people's, you know, history, because we had talked about it coming in that game, and Atwater asked me, "Well, how are you gonna handle Christian Okoye?" I said, "Well, I'm gonna try to run through him if I get a chance. I'm gonna run through him right early in the game, try to make a statement, you know." And he was like, "Yeah, all right." I was like, "I'm gonna run through him too." So I'm like, "Okay." I was like, "So we get in the game, and." You know, I don't remember if it was before the hit or after the hit, but after one of the plays, and somebody made a tackle or something, and the offensive lineman for Kansas City jumps over a pile, hits me right in my ankle, bam, I'm out of the game, I'm done. I'm not even playing no more. I'm like, shit, I can't even do it. No, all right, so I think it might have been after he had his big hit, but then, like, later in the game, I'm watching from the sideline now, because I think I was on the field when he had his big hit. I was there. I was still on the field. But right after that hit, I go out, and I'm out of the game. So Randy Robbins, my backup, is playing safety now, And then, like, a few plays later, I see Krishna Koya on another play. He's coming right to the side where Randy Robbins is, which would have been me. And I was thinking, that would have been my play right there. That's my opportunity. Because it was a toss. You know, it was like those plays were, oh, that's the one you want. He's right there. There's the lane. He's going to run right there. And Randy just cut him. I'm like, oh. I said, it wasn't meant to be. And that hit probably was what made At famous. So, you know, it wasn't meant to be. It wasn't meant to be for me to get any of that glory that day because I was on the sideline watching. But
well,
it was
what
a great
was it
hit.
Like go ahead.
Well, they set up things for us to do, you know, like it was catered to us, to the safeties when we played. And rightfully so, because we could change the game, you know. Wade did a good job of just implementing plays for us to be a big impact, especially early in the game. And I think that's important to set a tone. I don't even know, you can't even set a tone like that anymore. I mean, you can't hit people like that anymore and not get fined or get, you know, kicked out of the game. But when we played, it was okay, you know, and it was part of the game, you know. But I always felt the hits I hit, I feel like I would hit like that now. I don't really feel that, you know. I feel sore and bad, my neck hurts all the time. But I think it's safer to hit high than to hit, you know, in the knees in that area. Because you get knocked out more when you go low. You know, you either get knocked out or run over, or you take somebody's knees out. So, you know, I'd rather hit people high than hit them low. Hit them high, you live to play another down. And you hit them low, you usually get knocked out. We used to have a name, saying for it. We called it getting cooked in the, you know, you get down that squat position, you get cooked right there. You get run over. So...
besides the 1985 game against San Diego that we talked about, was there a particular game that really stands out in your mind from your career?
A particular game?
Yeah, like where you played, like, really well. I mean, one of your best games that you've played, not necessarily played in a game, but the way you played yourself that day.
I think against Seattle, the 1989 season, in Seattle, because we were playing, and I felt personally I was playing really well, and I was making a lot of plays even early in the game. But halftime, I think we were losing, and we went into the locker room, and the defensive line coach, I'm failing to remember his name, but he was very vocal. And he told us, he said, we were playing like girls, basically. And he said, do we want to drop our skirts and give it all to them? And I thought that was the funniest thing I ever heard. I can't even think of the defensive line coach's name now, man. He passed away too. I know he passed away, but
I actually remember that game. Weren't you guys being shut out at halftime, like 14-0?
I don't know if we were shut out, but it was the 89 season, and we were definitely losing at halftime. And I can't think. I want to say, Earl Leggett. He's passed away. Man, I love that guy. Earl Leggett, he said, you want to just drop your shorts and give it all to him or something. He said something like that. I thought it was so funny. But we went back out there, and I continued to play well. I think that was one of my best overall games I had that year, but I was playing my butt off that year. I only had two interceptions, but my impact on the team and the plays that I was making, like causing fumbles and things like that, were like really, you know. And I think, and the thing about it is, we tied the game and we were in overtime. And I got interception in overtime and ran it back to like the 20 or something like that. And then we were able to kick a field goal and win the game. But I was just playing my butt off that game. And I think Earl Leggett's halftime speech really motivated me to play even better the second half. And that was one of the best games I played. One of my biggest hits, though, I think, was against the Cincinnati Bengals. I don't remember what year, and I don't remember the player, but I hit this guy.
It was 1991. I'm a Bengals fan.
Was it?
I'm pretty sure
it was 91.
I don't know if it was 91. I don't think it was. It was before.
I remember
that.
A big
no,
hit
this,
you had the 91 no, game, and I think the 84
that.
Game in Denver.
It was before that. It was before that in Denver. It might have been. It was definitely in the 80s. It was 80,
no, wait, it was the 86 game where y'all beat us 34-28 because the officials kept giving y'all the calls.
No, you know what? It was, I don't, you remember, if you remember the reason I mentioned this because I don't think I did anything else that year but that hit, but I went to the Pro Bowl and I think it was just based on that hit. And I think if it was one hit you ever want to show on me, I would want it to be that one because it was like, I was playing two deep zone, and I can't remember the running back's name, but it had to be before. It was definitely in the 80s, not 90s. It was not in the 90s.
It was 84, 86. You had a big hit in all three of them, I remember.
It was 80, might have been 86. Might have been 86. I think it was.
That was 34-28. That was a great game.
It was a big running back, too, not a little guy. It was a big
Larry
running Canterbury. Back, but it was maybe so, but – he was running around to the right side and was in Denver, and I came from half the field, and I just got a running start, and I ran up, and I, bam, I hit him, and I knocked him out. And the ball came out, and Ricky Hundley tried to scoop it up, and he kicked the ball out of bounds, and he should have scooped it up and ran it in for a touchdown, but he kicked it out of bounds, but I knocked him out. I can't remember what the running back's name was, but I knocked him out.
It was Larry Canterbury, I'm pretty sure.
And his arms were frozen in place, and he went down, and all my face mask was busted. I had to come out of the game to replace my face mask because it was broke. It was just gone. And that was the biggest hit. And that, I look at hits, that's the kind of hit that you don't want to hurt anybody permanently, but that's the kind of message you want to send early in a game to, send a message to the players that, you be careful. I always want to do it early in the game because you don't want to, because you're fresh early in the game too, but plus you want to send a message to the other team that, we're a physical team. That's basically what you want to do. And, I did that again against the Indianapolis Colts, and a player, I remember his name, Roosevelt Potts, who was running over everybody before we played him. And I was like, I got to run through him early too. And the difference was, it was later in my career. I wasn't as young. I slammed into him. I knocked him out, but I almost knocked myself out too. And I was like, wow. The difference was a few years to make because they had to carry me back to the huddle, but I didn't want to come out of the game. See, that's a different mindset too. You don't want to come out of the game, and I probably had a concussion right then, but I stayed in the game to show I'm tougher than him. But I was probably as woozy as he was.
As a fan. Watching all the Elway comebacks over the years. It's very exciting to watch on TV. But for you and the rest of the defense, being on the sideline while he's engineering those game-winning drives, what was it like to be a part of all those memorable comebacks that you guys had with John Elway?
Well, they were very exciting, especially when it came to playoff time. You know, you, you get through the grind of the season and you get in the playoffs. This was when they really mean something. You know, he was able to do that, you know, time and time again. I remember games against, I see Warren Moon all the time, and it's like, Warren Moon is like, we the only reason he never got to the Super Bowl. You know, he could never get past us because he always had to come to Denver to try to beat us. And it just wasn't happening because Elway brought us back every time, you know, because Warren did all he could because they had some great games against us. We couldn't stop them, but they couldn't stop Elway. So, you know, we had one, you know, one upped them with Elway. So I see him all the time, and we still talk about it and everything. I'm upset that I never won a Super Bowl, and he's upset he'd never been in a Super Bowl. So those are things you never get over. And we still upset about it. I still get pissed about it myself.
So, what do you think? You played on a lot of great Broncos teams. What do you think was the best Broncos teams you played, or best Broncos team you played on?
Man, that's I think actually the team that went to the Super Bowl against the 49ers when I was there, the last Super Bowl we played in,
Super Bowl 24, or the
91 team. I actually really think the 91 team that went to Buffalo in the AFC Championship was probably better, and we probably had a better chance of winning the Super Bowl with that team. We were really ready to win the Super Bowl, I think, that year. And we had the team to do it with, and Elway got hurt, and that screwed that up. So, you know, we had a little few bad, you know, strokes of bad luck that screwed up things, but I would say 89 and 91. And 91, I think, was my best year ever because I played more. And I think that was the key in all my years, if you look back on it, is the fact that I think I played more games. If I was able to stay on the field, I played at a high level, but I was hurt a lot early in my career especially. And staying on the field is hard. It's hard to stay healthy for everybody, but, man, especially it seemed like it was for me. And then my last few years later in my career, as I got older, I was able to stay healthy. And the years that I stayed healthy, I had really great years.
I only got a couple minutes left.
Yeah, we got like 2 minutes left. So go ahead, Matt.
I was just going to ask real quick, what are you doing these days?
I'm a landlord. I started buying income property while I was still playing, and something I understood. My grandfather bought property. My grandmother had income property. My mom has income property. So it was something I understood, and all her, you know, siblings had, my grandmother's siblings had income property. So it's something I really understood, and the only other job I held for any length of time was playing in the NFL. So I knew I couldn't work for anybody else, so I knew I could collect rent, and that was something I understood, so that's what I went with. And it's paid off for me because I haven't had to beg for any money from anybody, so I'm okay. And I'm still in my same house I bought in 1990, and it's paid off. So I'm good. I'm living good, and I'm feeling good. I feel great, and I'm still married to the same woman. I'm married 32 years ago, got two kids that just moved out, bought their own house. So life is good right now.
Hey, well, Dennis, like I said, it was an honor to talk to you tonight. I think I can speak for Matt by saying that. Getting ready to cut off, and it will cut off abruptly. So, I mean, we would love to have you back on the show. Great guest. I mean, we've had a great time talking to you.
Well, you got my number now.
Yep, I got. Well, it's 111111. Remember.
Well, you have.
Thanks very
much
for joining us, Dennis.
All right, thanks.
Hey,
for
but
me.
Thanks a lot, Dennis. Matt, you got any closing comments?
No, just very appreciative for you taking time out to join us tonight.
All right, thanks, Mike.
Well, it was a pleasure, Dennis. Anytime, man.
All right, take care.
So, yeah, thank you. So, everybody, remember, next Wednesday night, 11 o'clock, we'll have another episode of The Grueling Truth. You can follow us on Twitter at the Red Light Sports Network.